Judges 14. And Samson went down to Timnah and saw the woman in Timnah of the daughter of the Philistines. And he came up and told his father and mother and said, I have seen a woman in Timnah of the daughter of the Philistines. And now get her for me for a wife. His father and mother said to him, Is there not a woman among the daughters of your brothers and among all my people that you must go and take a woman from the uncircumcised Philistines? And Samson said to his father, Get her for me, for she pleases me very much. And his father and his mother did not know that it was from the Lord, that he was seeking an occasion against the Philistines. For at that time the Philistines were ruling over Israel. And Samson said to his father and his mother, and they went down to Timnah. And they came to the vineyards of Timnah, and behold, a young lion roaring to meet them. And the Spirit of the Lord came mightily on him, and he tore it as the cleaving of a kid. And there was nothing in his hand. And he did not tell his father and his mother what he had done. He went down and talked with the woman. She was pleasing in the eyes of Samson. Some days later, he returned to take her, and turned aside to see the remains of the lion. Behold, a bee swarm in the carcass of the lion, and honey. He took it out on his hands and went on eating and walking. He went to his father and to his mother and gave some to them. They ate, but he did not tell them that he took the money out of the body of the lion. His father went down to the woman, and Samson made a feast there, for so the young men usually did. It happened when he saw him, they took 30 companions, and they were with him. Samson said to them, Please let me riddle a riddle to you. If you certainly declare it to me in the 7 days of the feast, and find it out, then I shall give you 30 linen garments and 30 changes of clothing. If you are not able to tell me, then you shall give me 30 linen garments and 30 changes of clothing. They said to him, Riddle your riddle, and we shall hear it. He said to them, Out of the eater came forth food, and out of the strong came forth sweetness. They were not able to declare the riddle in 3 days. And it happened on the 7th day, they came to Samson's wife. Entice your husband, that he may declare to us the riddle, lest we burn you and your father's house with fire. Have you called for us to make us poor? Is it not so? Samson's wife wept before him and said, You only hate me and do not love me. You have riddled the riddle to the sons of my people, and you have not declared it to me. He said to her, Behold, I have not declared it to my father and to my mother, and shall I declare it to you? She wept before him the 7 days on which they feasted. And it was on the 7th day he told her, for she distressed him. She told the riddle to the sons of her people, and the men of the city said to him on the 7th day, Before the sun went in, what is sweeter than honey? What is stronger than a lion? And he said to them, Unless you had plowed with my heifer, you would not have found out my riddle. And the Spirit of the Lord came upon him. He went down to Ashkelon and struck 30 men of them, and took their plunder. He gave the changes to those who told the riddle, and his anger burned. He went up to his father's house. Samson's wife became his companions, who had been his feeder.
Little fun things going on in this chapter. It's kind of interesting at times. I wrote down the riddle he posed, and the first answer that the Philistines gave. You guys are going to give me the correct answer. We'll get to that when we get to that point. There's the answer which he gave and the answer which the Philistines gave, which is technically correct, but Samson didn't produce the lion. Samson didn't put honey in the lion's carcass. God did. So what is God's answer to that riddle? We'll get there. It's quite funny. I find it interesting. So, first of all, Samson is a very intelligent man.
Yes.
We'll run across this a few times. He actually speaks in metaphors quite frequently. There's at least three separate occasions he speaks in metaphors, and twice he acts on a metaphor, meaning he leaves a symbol and walks away and expects the people who see the symbol to understand what he's trying to say. Very intelligent person, though as far as for all practical purposes, coming from a small, insignificant family, probably not greatly educated. He just happened to be very intelligent. More power to him. The brains and broad, right? Isn't that what everybody always wants, all the girls want? Yeah, no kidding.
God gave him a lot of insight.
Yeah, he did give him a lot of insight. So before we go into our little commentary and discussion today, are there any questions or something I can answer or have commentary on? Yes,
well,
Tammy.
I'm presuming you're going to bring this up, but I'm
maybe.
Gonna, like in verse 4 where it says, his father and his mother did not know that it was of the Lord, for he was seeking an occasion against the Philistines.
Yes.
Who's the key that was seeking the occasion? Was it Samson that he was seeking the occasion and he was setting this whole thing up, or was it the Lord? And I'm sure you've got an answer for that.
Yes, I do have the answer to that. There happens to be two separate occasions that occur in this story. One we just don't hear until the next chapter. But there are two occasions that are being sought. One is for Samson, and the other one happens to be for God. Maybe you could argue there's three, but we won't discuss. There's a slight separation in chapter 15 where there's two things going on. But yeah, we're going to have fun with that one too, hopefully. Yes, any other comments?
I'm kind of confused. The last verse, verse 20, Jeff's verse and mine don't.
Why don't you read your verse?
But Samson's wife was given to his companion whom he had used as his friend.
Yes, and Jeff, would you please reread the verse you read, chapter or verse 20.
Samson's wife became his companions who had been his feeder.
Yeah.
What was the last word?
Feeder.
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 Yeah, person who feeds.
Yeah. You have another version?
New King James Version, which says, who had been his best man.
Any other versions other than those three? Or yes, Bill.
This one says, Samson's wife then married one of those who had been his wedding companions.
And this one has, where am I? Oh, yeah, I told you that one. This one says, and his wife was given to the companion who had been best man at the wedding.
Yes, hey.
Well, not different.
Go ahead.
A new topic or question.
Just this way before you change topics on me. Yes, Tammy.
Richard will appreciate this. The English word that we say companion is literally with bread. It's somebody with whom you would eat bread.
Yes.
So that's what I was thinking of when you said feeder. Like, bing, bing, bing.
There are,
this
isn't just an ordinary person.
Yeah.
This is this person who's been given to. He happens to fall into two separate categories. Both of them, he's the same guy, just that he's in two categories. You had your hand comment?
I was just saying that feeder and companion are the related Hebrew words.
Yes, they're virtually not identical, but they're very, very similar. Yes, best man is probably a good version of translation of it, but I wouldn't say he was a friend. A different kind of best man. Because unlike in Western society, we think of, there's a groom, he finds somebody to be his best man, a few groomsmen, that kind of thing. And it's usually one of his friends or close acquaintances is going to be the best man, and then somebody else, you know, other groomsmen, that kind of thing. Not the case here. His friends aren't allowed in a Philistine wedding. Mm-hmm. This is a Philistine wedding. This is not a Jewish wedding. As it pointed out, if you caught that or not, he was going to the Philistines to make and made a feast. He held a feast, which is a custom of the young man. I don't know if you saw that or when he was reading it. It's actually, this is a Philistine custom. Not to say it's a bad custom, it just happens to be a Philistine one. Judaism has its own customs, which are slightly different. Now, as a result, much like in many religions today, which is not uncommon, in that your best man is selected for you, not you select your best man. It's the person who's going to assist you, be there for, take care of you. It's not necessarily your friend. It can be your father. It could be a son. It could be a brother. It can be anybody else. But you're not the person who chooses it. So that's one category this guy falls into. He happens to be Philistine as well. Yes, Tammy.
Would verse 10 be the Philistine equivalent of a bachelor party?
That's been worded twice, and I don't know for sure. It's been argued both ways, one being bachelor, one being a wedding. It's a little difficult to say which one it actually is. It's a little difficult. I can't swear to it.
More is the rehearsal dinner.
It could be. We're trying to take a Philistine concept of a culture that's been dead for how many thousands of years and bring it into Western terminology and concepts. It's a little bit difficult to do that because I'm not familiar enough with the Philistine philosophy and way of life to be able to take their wedding concepts and philosophies and bring them all into modern-day terminology. So I can't swear if it's a wedding or bachelor party, but Samson did assume she was his wife from that point forward. So that was a marriage, as far as I know of, is that she is now his, though her father gives it to somebody else. So it's kind of, to me, it looks like it's like a combo of a slash bachelor party and wedding and like a rehearsal dinner all rolled into one for 7 days long. With Jewish custom, a wedding is 7 days. Yes, Hank.
Well, so it seems like this guy, the feeder, best man, is more of a fall guy.
Yeah, sort of, kind of.
In essence, to protect, the union,
The whole purpose of somebody standing up there with you is to protect the marriage. Right. That's the whole point of why you have, best men and bridesmaids, thank you, maid of honor, is their goal is to help your marriage succeed. That is their function.
In this context and in this culture, it would seem that this guy is protecting her honor and her reputation because of what happened, what he did after this, it would be, it obviously dissolved the marriage. That he went out and killed, 30 guys and this, that, and then, she was given to this other guy.
That's very, non-Jewish thinking of that statement, dissolve the marriage. It didn't dissolve the marriage. Judaism, I can get mad at my wife, and I can storm off for a month. I didn't sleep around, she didn't sleep around, nothing's changed, we're still married. Until a legal bill of divorcement's given to you. Because, mind you, Israel has a Torah which has a set of laws that rules must be followed. Philistines,
don't. I'm not saying it's a Jewish custom.
Right. That's the point. Yeah. That's why I said it's a Philistine concept, something the Jews brought up. Because that's what they played on. They used that, thinking, Philistine wedding. He obviously doesn't want her, reject for whatever reason, doesn't make a difference. Let's give her somebody else. Tolerable in that culture, not in Jewish culture. Now, I'm not discussing David's wife or anything happened there. That's a separate issue with Saul and Saul and David. Which that's a separate discussion. That was their problem. But this is a unique culture clash between Philistine concept and Jewish or Israeli concept. Any other comments? Yes.
I just think that this vignette, along with the one of Elimelech and Naomi, who had allowed their sons to marry Moabite women.
Mm-hmm. Ruth and
state of the Jewish society at the time, doesn't it?
So we're going to be discussing that today, too, hopefully. Okay. Ooh. Right. And I'm already short on time. That's not fair. I started 15 minutes late, but that's all right. Okay. Yes, we'll discuss that, too, hopefully today. I hope we don't run out of time. Okay, I'm going to just move past as opposed to taking questions so I don't get through this thing and have some more interesting concepts going on. First of all, try to rack your minds. 2 weeks ago, chapter 13, we didn't read it today, read it 2 weeks ago. Did the Israelite people ever cry out to the Lord regarding the Philistines' oppression? No, they didn't. They didn't say, oh, God, please save us. Oh, God, we're sorry. Nothing of that happened. We oppressed. Okay, whatever. Is that the same as what happened to all the other judges?
No.
No, not one of the other judges had that scenario. Every one of them, the people rose up and said, God, these people are oppressing us, please help. Except the Philistines. They didn't.
It's just Samson.
Well, yeah, it's Samson. It's Samson being the judge that was being raised up. They didn't. They didn't cry out at this point. So is God inclined to say, oh, I will come and save you, my people?
No.
No. Because they didn't ask him to. So if you're God and you have a scenario that you want the Philistines to back off and the people aren't asking you to save them, what's a good idea? Oh, I know. I will create a scenario such that I can then attack them and make the Philistines back off my people. That's precisely what he does through Samson's life. It's quite interesting. God's hand is all throughout Samson's existence. Note, Samson does not save Israel from the Philistines at all. Not once does it say and Israel was free or had peace during his lifetime. It doesn't. That's not what Samson's job was. His job was not to create a free Israelite society, which they were begging for, because they weren't begging for it. His job was to fulfill God's will at this point, separate and independent from Israel. So they didn't ask for help. God doesn't deliver them as a result. Instead, he raises up, as I mentioned last week, he literally created Samson from the womb all the way up, gave him the exact conditions. What conditions did we discuss regarding the Nazarite vows that weren't really explicitly listed out? Do you recall that at all? When the angel came and talked to his mother and his father's name, Manoah. Thank you. there were things he listed off. There's no razor you're supposed to touch his head, right? Remember that one? No fruit of the vine. Okay, yeah, the angel mentioned that. Now,
no unclean things.
And the fourth one that the angel mentioned to the wife, but not to Manoah, he will deliver or help start delivering Israel from the Philistines. Didn't mention it to Manoah, but mentioned it to his wife. We don't know for sure if she told him. It doesn't matter. But the angel didn't say anything to Manoah. There's one other rule, though, I could have sworn. Let's go look it up. Yeah, she has to observe it from the womb through.
No intoxicating liquor.
No grapevine, no wine or other intoxicant. Anything unclean, and she has to observe it.
Okay. Numbers chapter 6, verse 6. This is another rule that is a part of all Nazarite vows. But for some reason, Samson is exempt from this rule. Numbers chapter 6, verse 6. This part, I'm not going to read the whole chapter. It's a sanctification through Nazarite vows. It says, quote, we'll read also to verse 5. It says, all the days of the vow of the separation, no razor shall go upon his head until the days are fulfilled in which he has separated himself to the Lord. He shall be holy, and then he shall let the locks of hair, of his head grow. All the days that he separates himself to the Lord, he shall not go near a dead body.
Yeah, he's going around killing
people. He's killing people! By God's will, he's killing people. This is a very unique Nazarite vow. God created a person and actually altered his conditions that says this person is going to fulfill my will. It's so bizarre. Why would God give his Torah that says this is what must happen and then select a person and say, oh, well, you'll be raised up like this with the exception of this rule. We're throwing that one out temporarily. And we'll have you kill people. I mean, it's one thing touching dead bodies. It's actually killing somebody in the process. What do you think's going through God's head? Three hands up. So we'll start with Jeff first.
Well, that was what he was set aside to do. That was his whole vow, was to be an oppressor on the Philistines.
The Philistines, right.
So that was his vow. His vow was for that purpose.
Mm-hmm. Now, okay, we'll explore that in a few minutes, because that actually is a great play into other Nazarite vows. Yes,
and here's
Tammy.
The part of this thing about, you know, going near a dead body.
Mm-hmm.
He's not even supposed to do this for the sake of his mother or father or anybody.
Exactly.
But here, verse 8 is the kicker. Not verse 8, verse 9. But if a man dies very suddenly beside him and he defiles his dedicated hair, mm-hmm. he shall shave his head on the day when he becomes clean.
Right.
He shall shave it on the same day. So what he should have done...
is cut his hair every time he killed somebody.
He should have been cutting his hair, but obviously that didn't happen, because we know later on.
Yeah, exactly. No, the last hand was up.
Was a hold on, man. They were lying when he touched him.
Yeah, the donkey bone killed him. I didn't. Go ahead.
Well, the other thing that's related, a little bit off the subject, but still apart, is how he gathered the honey out of the carcass of the lion.
Which is a dead body.
Unclean thing.
And it's a dead
body. And
it's
he made a point not to tell his parents where he got it.
Exactly. Should have gone against the Nazarite vow had they realized this. Right? There's a lot of rules he's bending or...
Yeah.
But honestly, he thoroughly broke many of them, thrown away and trampled on a few.
Yeah.
But yet he's still one of the most dynamic judges Israel ever had. Not the most successful, but at least one of the most dynamic ones.
Well, it doesn't appear, it seems like there's a bit of a
prophecy
going
yes,
on. Yeah,
there is.
Contradiction, because he's also marrying a Philistine woman,
yes,
but
there is.
As a Nazarite.
Yep, yep. Completely, completely. Yes, his whole history, his story, is full of contradictions. And yet,
the Lord backs them all up.
God backs up the whole process.
Well, that's not fair.
No, it's not. There should be some kind of rules that we should all have to apply and live by. Well, there are rules.
Yeah, but to the point of
there are purposes though. Yes,
his vow being to
specific for one task
to attacking the Philistines. That was also the purpose of his marriage too.
That's true. It was.
Was to bring the attack on the Philistines.
Now we had mentioned a few times now. There are men who take Nazarite vows, right? Well, there are also women that take Nazarite vows. We've discussed this in the past. You know, with Jephthah's daughter was most likely that was the case. You have, I want to call her
Anna,
thank you. That was the case. It was a permanent dedication to temple service. Now, what service did that include?
Circumcision.
Well, what else do you do with the temple service that cannot benefit the priest, but only benefit God? Well, you can, chop wood. That's an idea. You can probably draw some water. Yeah, that's something you can do. You can do various tasks.
Decoration.
You can decorate. You can clean.
Welcoming
people. The various things, or whatever else is required. I don't run a temple. I don't know the ins and outs of it. I mean, sweeping the floor, I'm sure, takes a lot of work when you realize you're building that size.
Yeah.
So I'm sure there are a lot of rules and a lot of things they had to obey and do. What if a Nazarite was offered to you by God as you're pretend yourself you're a high priest, and Nazareth brought to you and said, okay, well, this person's job is to slaughter the cows.
Uh-oh.
What do I do? I'm the high priest. I'm supposed to do that. Nobody else is supposed to do that. But God's telling me otherwise. This is so bizarre. It's a bizarre scenario. It's because, as Jeff mentioned, is a specific reason that God created this individual. This, am I Samson? Oh, no way. Look at me. is Jeff Samuel? How about Ellie? Is she Leah or anybody else? Any of you, one of the people, listen to the Bible? No. Does that mean God probably didn't create you to do something back here, right? Right. He created you to do something where you are now, not back here. There's a difference. God created Samson to do one task, and he had to do it God's way. Because God, just like he dealt with the prophets, they had to do some really grotesque things. Things that would make you horribly unclean.
Mm-hmm.
All right? In some cases, permanently unclean.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, if God has commanded that of prophets, Samson's not a Levite. You know what? He actually fits more in the category, since he didn't save Israel, as prophet than he does judge, as Samuel was. He's actually more of a prophet. As I mentioned before, he's a very intelligent person. Spoke and communicated with metaphors, similes, that kind of thing. Well, isn't that what prophets do? They communicate in that form. You remember Jeremiah's, you know, the yoke? You can't break it. And they're like, well, no, you can break the yoke. The conflict between two prophets. Their lives reflected messages that they were trying to convey. Well, Samson's no different. He's actually one of the earlier prophets. Because of the style of life he led is what categorizes him better as a prophet than as a judge.
A prophet with an attitude.
God built him up. God's created him to do something, and that's exactly what he did. Yes, he's a contradiction. So are 99% of all prophets. They live contradictory lives by God's command. That's their job. Take it or leave it. That's the way life is sometimes. It's kind of funny, but that's just the way it is. He's no different. So he breaks rules all the time. And God is there to help him because God sets the scenario so that he will break the rule. Now, all three went down. We're going to continue on by a little story here. All three go down to Timnah to meet this young lady. Of course, he saw her earlier. We don't know where he saw her at. It may have been, you know, Zoar, Eshkatol, or whatever. They're all right next to the door. You'd probably throw a rock and hit somebody on the other side of the next city over. A short distance to travel. So he probably was visiting. No big deal. He saw somebody. He was really attracted to her. And actually, the phrase is actually pleasing in my eyes. It was the whole not love at first sight, more actually lust at first sight. It's probably a more accurate term. Talk to his parents. Yes, I know it's illegal. Do it anyway. They conceded. Okay, well, God, you gave him to us. We don't understand it, but we'll do it. He's our son. We love him. Our only child. Goes down there. They examine her, talk to her, visit her, that kind of thing. Presumably visit her parents as well. They usually use an arranged marriage. It takes a little bit of work to set that kind of thing up. So they go down there. But on their trip, what happens to Samson? They come to a vineyard. Now, surprisingly enough, of all the rules he breaks, what's one rule he doesn't seem to actually break? The alcohol. And what's the other rule? Except till he dies. His hair. Of all the rules to follow, for some bizarre reason, there are two he seems to want to follow. The rest of them, not such a big deal. They reach a vineyard. Now, what are the rules? No fruit of the vine can you touch. So what does he have to do when he comes to the vineyard? Well, Mom, Dad, you keep going the path. I'll walk around this way and go around it. Over here, I'm hopping away. Oh, look, there's a lion. You know, this is what happens. They separate. They separate each other. His parents, they're all going down, presumably together. That's the whole purpose of the trip. So his parents can meet the girl. And granted, what male would not want their parents with him as he's walking down to meet his future bride, singing her praises, though he's only seen her probably once or twice, has no clue what she talks like or anything about her. But still, he's going to be with them, but he's not here. Because the singular form is what shows up. The lion comes after him, not them. He doesn't tell his parents about the lion at all. Of course, the Spirit of God comes along. He rips the lion apart and leaves. Doesn't tell anybody. They meet the girl. That's fine. Blah, blah, blah. They go home. There's honey. So, which, of course, he brings up later on in this party, whether it be a wedding party, bachelor, who knows, whatever the party it is. He produces this riddle. From the ear came forth food, from the strong came forth sweetness. Now, the answer, which of course took them many days. Now, Jeff's wording of his translation is slightly different than mine. Not that one's right or wrong, just slightly different. It says it took him, verse 14, he resolved, and they said they could not tell the solution of the riddle for 3 days. Verse 15, that was on the Sabbath day that they said to Samson's wife, entice your husband to tell you the riddle for us, lest we will burn you and your father, sorry, your father's house, with fire. Did you invite us here to impoverish us? We're going to stop there for a minute. We'll discuss a little bit more what's going on. Were they intending to ever pay if they lost?
No.
I mean, if you're threatening to kill somebody, You're obviously not intending to pay them. What's the point? Now, if he's willing to kill Samson's wife, and cause they all call it husband, by the way, Samson's wife and her father's house, one of their own people, what's to stop them from killing an Israelite? Well, nothing. Other than the fact they have no clue how strong Samson is, but they don't know that yet. They find that out a little bit later.
The hard way.
Yeah, the hard way. Yeah, it cost them dearly. So they have no intention of paying. The mindset the Sabbath day is when they arrive, which in Jewish tradition means the fourth day. I mean, 3 days have passed, and the fourth day they talk to his wife. Minor detail. I think you just said the seventh day, I think it was. The word itself is neither Sabbath nor seven. It's Shavi. Not quite. It's very similar to Shavi.
It says,
there's an extra little syllable at the end of it. I'm not going to discuss all of its details. Judaism translates that means the seventh day. The Sabbath day, though it does not say Shabbat. A lot of translations will say 7 days, but it doesn't mean actually seven either. It's a little slightly different. Because it takes her a few days to coax her husband into convincing him to tell her the story. Well, if it's already 7 days, well, the wedding feast is already over. And it says they waited 3 days before they talked to her. Well, why would she wait 3 days, then talk to her, because now it's instantly the seventh day? Well, that means she would have had to wait 6 days, not three. So there's a little, we're not sure what day it was. We don't know for sure, but it was there. It was sometime during the feast, but it most likely was after 3 days, but before seven. That's all we know. Poses a riddle. She, of course, convinces him to tell her. He's weak when it comes to that area of his life, which we'll discuss that in future weeks. The answer that they gave. What's sweeter than honey? What is stronger than a lion? Right? This just matches what we already read. No big deal, right? He killed the lion, and honey was it. That was supposed to be the answer. Because from the eater, which is the lion, came forth food, which is honey. From the strong came forth sweetness. Food is kind of generic. Food happened to have been honey. The sweetness gave it away that it was honey. Yeah, they answered, yeah, what is sweeter than honey? What's stronger than a lion? Right? That's the answer. Done. Okay, yeah, we lost. Meaning that Samson lost the bet, or lost the riddle, and thus he had to go kill 30 people. what a sentence. Did Samson create the lion?
No.
Did Samson send the bees? I mean, how many bees? I don't know how that many bees that actually locate, honeybees that is, locate a carcass of an animal to go make a nest in. Most of them that I run across run into like wood is their biggest.
Meat bees will do that.
Meat bees will, but honeybees?
They don't produce honey.
Yeah, exactly. Honeybees don't. Right. Now, so now, I'm not saying that has never happened. Don't get me wrong. I'm sure it has happened. But why would, if it was just an arbitrary circumstance, why is it in the Bible? Because God had to have created this scenario. You had your hand up a minute ago. Dave, do you have a comment?
Well, the other thing is when we read that, we just kind of blow by.
Mm-hmm.
The thing of it is, it took time for those bees to get there, for one,
mm-hmm.
create the hive before they even produce some honey, and then have enough honey to take away with you.
Yep.
That all took time. I would imagine weeks.
It takes some time to make this happen.
So this isn't just something that just happened in just a matter of days.
That's what I would normally presume. Now, God has some influence here. God's got something. He can accelerate things. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
He can make things happen a little faster.
He can place things in a different place. Too.
So we have the answer the Philistines gave to Samson. You know, it's kind of funny because their answer looks like another riddle,
mm-hmm.
doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What's the second answer? What's the answer to the Philistines' second riddle? Now, that the answer is actually in the Bible. You just don't know where how to. You're not quite sure what you're looking at. Okay. In Samson's story, what is stronger than the lion?
Samson.
Samson. Okay. So we actually have another compound answer going on here. What's sweeter than honey?
This is a hard one. Say it again.
Torah.
Torah. That's a good answer. Anybody want to put it together? Samson's stronger than the lion. Torah, or actually I use the term God, but same difference. It's God's scenario. Is sweeter than honey.
God is with Samson.
God's with Samson. That is true. That is definitely true statement. What is now? Samson's a prophet. Think Samson's a prophet. His life is a prophet, just like Hosea was, Isaiah was, Jeremiah. His life is a prophet. What's God's message to Samson? Well, who's Samson though?
The deliverer.
The deliverer. Samson is a messianic figure, right? So, what is stronger than a lion? Samson proved it himself. And what is he? He's a messianic figure, meaning he is a deliverer. We will discuss who all he delivers. So let's just rewrite this statement a little bit, or answer this, one of these questions. What is stronger than a lion? Samson. And Messiah.
Does this play at all into Judah's heritage?
Not in this case.
Being the lion.
Not in this case. You can't argue that, but we'll discuss that in a minute. Where did this occur? Philistine territory. Yes. Now, Passover's coming up. What's sweeter than honey?
Harrison? Good answer, Tim.
What's the that is a good answer. Don't get me wrong. It's a well-placed answer.
Syrup?
Well, it can be.
Freedom?
Freedom. Well, I'll use red. I like red. It stands out better. Freedom. I don't write very well. Now, don't get wrong. There are probably a dozen answers you could probably figure out. That's not the point. Samson's messianic figure. He posed a riddle to the Philistines. But God posed a riddle right back to him. And to all of us who read him today. Read about him. Samson may be a contradiction, meaning it looks screwy. It does. It looks screwy. Something just doesn't make sense to me. When you read his Nazarite vows compared to what he actually lived. All right? There is obviously a huge contradiction here. It just looks funny, but it's designed to catch your attention. That is the purpose. It's designed to say, what's going on here? I don't get it. Well, Samson being a messianic figure, all right, God talking, I'm paraphrasing here. I don't really speak for God. Talking to Samson, yes, Samson, you're going around a long way. You're going into Philistine territory, enemy territory. They are the lion that you're going to kill. What was Messiah going through? Messiah went through the same thing. Lion's going to kill you. But you're stronger than that because I'm with you. That's the goal of Samson's story. He's actually stronger than the lion. Just like the Messiah is stronger than death he had to face. Samson produced something through that killing of the lion. So the Messiah did. The Messiah happened to be the lion in that case, but that's all right. In some ways, because he was killed. Freedom is the answer to Samson's second riddle posed to him. Because that's what he produced. Not to everybody. But that was his function. When he killed, which we haven't gotten here, a few chapters from now, when he kills a huge swath of governors, the Philistines, with the whole temple that he collapses, what is sweeter than freedom? which would all of Israel, at least all of Judah, that territory, the immediate surrounding area, felt. Now, his job was not to deliver all of them. That was God's job. But it's a message to God. It's just from God to Samson. I'm going to pose your riddle backwards on you. It's quite an interesting story. Because Samson's story isn't a story of a judge. It's a story of a prophet. He is the Messiah. Now, there's a reason why it says 3 days. And number three pops up a couple times. 30 companions, 30 clothes of changes of silver. Change of clothing and 30 sheets that are given. Now, the reason why mine says fourth day, which was happened to be a Saturday according to my translation. Jeff says seventh day, because a lot of things happen on the seventh day then. He's a messianic figure. His goal is to reflect something and give a message to those who are reading about him. Now, I don't have all the time to go through every detail, because there's a couple other symbols going on here too. Like true trait that God has, there's a lot of metaphors that fit this scenario. What if Samson isn't the answer to stronger? What if the one that's stronger than the lion is God, and Samson is the lion?
Well, he wasn't able to kill the lion until God's spirit came upon him.
Exactly. Which is another answer on top of the original one we talked about earlier. Because through Samson's death, what did God accomplish?
Liberation.
Freedom. So in other ways, Samson's the lion, and God is the one that's stronger than it. And through Samson's death, freedom's produced. In a different way, Samson's the one that's stronger, and the Philistines are the lion. Through the death of the Philistines, freedom is produced.
Like the Messiah.
Like the Messiah. These are compounding. Samson was a smart person. I give him full credit for it. And I think God made the scenario and recorded it for us to see. To give you a clue as what the message he wanted us to understand. Because mind you, the Messiah doesn't exist yet during Samson's time. They don't know what's going to happen. We already knew the past. We've already read it. So the people who are his contemporaries, what do they know about this story? Well, at this point in time, after it's been revealed, quite a lot. But it's a message for them. Two hands were up. Yes. I'll go for you first.
There's
actually another one too, but I won't discuss the other one.
This is almost like a message to the Jews. If the Jews of Yeshua's time were looking for what would be the ideal Nazarite, Samson would be like a total anachronism.
Not the person.
So it's almost like saying to them, yeah, you're expecting a Messiah, and he's not going to look like...
like you're expecting him to look like. Right. Exactly. Which is another message with inside this riddle. Yes, Ellie.
You could say the death of the lion gave freedom.
Yes.
Which is a message to the Jews. The death of the lion gives freedom.
Son of David.
Yes, it is. You know, I realize it's slightly abstract as far as our discussion today, but it's quite interesting that I like Samson's metaphors that are throughout his story. Now, we'll come across them a few more times. Now, granted, one he mentioned here as far as plowed with my calf, yeah, or plowed with my heifer. Who was plowed?
He
was plowed. They plowed him, meaning they got through him. They were
digging
in his field, which is what the Philistines have been doing for a couple hundred years at this point. They took over territory that God raised them up to take over, but that doesn't actually belong to them. They're in somebody else's field.
Quick question.
Yes, Hank.
Is that the Gaza Strip right now?
It is most of the Gaza Strip right now. Not all of it. So Philistines actually conquered a little bit more territory than just what we call the Gaza Strip. But so they've been, the Gaza Strip is slightly condensed, but it's very, very similar. Gaza Strip contains, I think, three of the five cities of Philistines, five major cities. So yeah, it's still around, still there. What's a funny scenario that's been going on? I would like to get to... I happen to like that little
Side note, that's why I spent so much time on it, but there's actually a couple other things that are going on here as well. Let's see here. Is everybody... Oh. Okay. Well, these aren't necessarily important, but they're actually kind of interesting perspectives. When did this occur? Time of year. Any clue?
Springtime.
Springtime. How do we know that?
These were out there only
in the springtime.
They only
moved
their hives in spring.
They only moved their hives in spring.
Honey can be collected by bees rapidly.
It can be.
They
do it really quickly. What's our second clue, which we haven't read yet because it's the next chapter?
The wheat harvest
is the next chapter. It's coming.
Okay, next
chapter. So which comes after spring?
Oh.
Wheat harvest. So this is I'm not saying he was married or had the party on Passover Day. No, we're not talking about that at all.
We're talking about time.
Time of year. It's approximately spring. Yes. And of course, a few weeks or possibly a few months go by. It doesn't say how much time, just that a time had passed, meaning his anger had subsided in the next chapter, which we'll get there, which is the wheat harvest time. So again, as a messianic figure, his first marriage, what was the goal? Verse 4, I think it was this chapter. What was the goal? What was God's goal?
Seeking an occasion against
the Philistines. Yeah, sounds familiar, doesn't it? Seeking an occasion against the Egyptians. Seeking an occasion against the Philistines. Seeking an occasion against sin. Seeking an occasion to do what is right, to follow God's plan. So this scenario, which we discussed here, he killed 30 Ashkelonites, which is a town close to the coast, a short travel, I think less than like 5-6 miles, something like that. Kills 30, goes back, pays him off. Seeking the occasion, that was his occasion. What was God's?
Send a message to the Philistines.
Not quite yet, but you're right. He does send a message to Philistines. Yes, Hank.
To reveal to Samson the second part of the riddle?
That's a possibility. That could be. The reveal to the second part of the riddle. That could be. Maybe that would have been his occasion. And the other possibility, which I happen to like, Samson already knew he wasn't supposed to take a wife from the Philistines. He was a Nazarite. He knew the law. Samson knew he wasn't supposed to touch a dead body. He's a Nazarite. He knew the law. If he knows the law, why would he do all these things that broke it? May have done it just because of the kind of person he was. The other is that he did it on purpose. To create an occasion against the Philistines, which is what he says in the next chapter. So the next chapter, chapter 15, which we haven't gotten to today, we'll discuss this in a little more detail then when we get there in 2 weeks from now, is that Samson vindicates himself, says, by other things happen, the Philistines do bad things, blah, 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 we'll get there, and he takes vengeance against the fact his wife was given away to his best man slash companion slash whatever it was. This time, I will not be responsible, Philistines, you are. Meaning, I won't set you up. You set yourself up. It's very possible that Samson set up this scenario because he knew God's will. He set up the scenario to select a wife from the Philistines and demanded it of his parents. Those parents told him otherwise. He set up the scenario of the riddle and gave it to his wife as the answer. Now, granted, it's debatable as far as how that worked out. As a scenario, to do what? To begin to deliver Israel from the hands of the Philistines. Just like he was planning to do. He's a smart person. He has weaknesses, don't get me wrong. He's a smart person. And it's very possible that this was the scenario, not the real scenario, but his life and what had happened in this first wedding or situation
was planned. They did it intentionally to create the scenario that God needed. Oh, your hand was up longer. Go ahead, Demi.
Now, because it says at the very end of the chapter, Samson's wife was given to the companion best friend, yes, or whatever. Now, if that had gotten around in the Jewish community or in the Israelite community, you know, hey, Samson married a Philistine girl.
And she's off with.
And then now she's off with his companion.
Or whatever it was. Or yeah, yeah.
And how embarrassing or humiliating that would be for him. Mm-hmm. So in a way, what he sets up, what happens in chapter 15 is just as much for his vindication as it is for God's.
In part, because he says it twice. He says two different ways in chapter 15. He does two different events. One is that, yeah, he burns the fields, which we'll get to there. And something else, the fact that the Philistines responded by killing his father-in-law, former father-in-law type person. He wasn't really much of a father-in-law. And his former wife. And that's when he says, now it's your responsibility. You responded in this kind. And he says, had you killed her earlier for committing adultery, I would have had issue with this. But now you killed her now because you knew I'm the one who burned your field. I got issue with that. See, if there is a scenario that's going on. So he does two things. Well, then he goes off and kills a whole bunch of them. Typical response. But I think Samson, I could be wrong. This is my personal opinion. I think Samson's really, really smart person. And I think he knew what the Philistines' reactions were going to be when he did certain things. I think that was the case. I could be wrong. I think that's the case. Hold on a minute. Your hand was up next.
Yeah, but did he see it coming that he would lose his eyes?
Well, probably not. Yes.
He's smart, but he's not this smart.
He may not be this smart. This takes some effort. Like this. I could be giving him more credit than necessarily he's worth. But I don't know. But I it was still really, really well, brilliantly done.
Yeah, it goes back to verse 4.
Yeah.
Where it says,
God set it up.
Who was the one?
Who was the he? Both were. But I think God was probably the one more inclined to be. That's probably true. Maybe I'm giving him too much credit. I don't know. But I happen to like the fact that it was so well played out that it sets the stage for all of Samson's rest of his life.